Hi, Phil.
Hello, Laurie. Welcome back.
Thanks so much.
I'm feeling smug.
Why are you feeling smug?
Well, because even though you've been jet-setting around the world, I've been doing real stuff.
Well, by real stuff, do you mean appearing in an audio format on BBC Radio Oxford?
I mean broadcasting across the world. What have you been doing this week?
But it's interesting you say that because, you know, I got the call from the BBC that put you in touch with them. So I wonder whether they were after, you know, yours truly first.
Well, maybe they were, maybe they weren't.
I should be the one who's smug because I've been in the beautiful heat of France. But either way, I think I would have vastly improved the radio appearance.
Whatever. Before you get to that, I was just about to say, oh, we're both winners. But then you said that, so no, we're fighting still.
Just listen to these audio clips to see how much better it might have been had I been there.
Should you be allowed to use your mobile phone in cinemas? Phil Bailey from Oxford presents the Super Bailey Bros in Movie Land podcast with his brother Laurie, where they chat about film and review the latest movies. And he's in with us now. Thank you very much for coming in today.
Thanks for having me.
And me, David. Thanks again.
So what do you make of this idea? This is targeted at you, the always-on generation.
I mean, it's interesting. I think, to be honest, people are doing this already. It's not that much of a... I think it's interesting that it's an official policy, but I think people are texting in films anyway. Part of the problem. You see their bright, glowing phones in the corner of your eye whenever you're watching a movie.
Oh, quite right, Phil. And of course, you know, I believe it was Anne Frank who said, look at how a single candle can both defy and define the darkness. And I guess for this generation, it's a bit more about how their mobile phone can both destroy and derail the cinematic experience. Am I right, David?
Thank you very much.
Look, seriously, don't mention it. You know, I'm a man just like everyone else. You know, and I'm sure my bro Phil here has something equally valuable to add.
I mean, maybe I take my shoes off, but that's...
Would you?
Yeah, if you get comfortable, enjoy the film how you would at home.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, there you go.
I think that was my point proven.
Big thanks to David for making me feel really, really welcome. It was really nice. It was a bit of a last minute thing and I was really glad to be on the BBC again. And drive time.
Yeah, well, David, I'm sorry we didn't get to meet and you'll just have to imagine how much better your afternoon would have been.
Whatever. He did say, how is this guy affording this jet-setting life?
Yeah, did he say that?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, the answer is I don't know. I won't be jet-setting for much longer, I promise.
You're grounded now, aren't you?
Yeah. Right, hey, listeners, welcome to episode 21. We're looking forward to going through emails and tweets. We've got what we've been watching again. Anything else?
Well, I think we're going to try something new, Laurie.
That always makes me nervous. New things make me nervous, Phil.
Why? It's brilliant.
Well,
it could be the best thing ever. It could be like the new Star Wars.
Do you think so? This is the thing that's going to send us right to the top of all the charts.
It could do, but you need to have a bit of positive attitude behind it.
Tell us what this is.
Well, you know, seeing as though I've been brought in to be a commentator on movie news, I thought maybe we could keep it going and comment on a couple of the other big stories of the day.
Right. And what would this feature be called?
Movie news.
How original. That's not really a news theme.
Well, I changed at the very end.
Right. Oh, yeah. I can't believe I missed that. Yeah. We're going to pick up on one or two stories, some of the big stories out there in today's world.
The interesting ones.
The movie fans in the world of movies.
Yeah, the interesting ones, just the fun ones.
Well, let's see how this one goes. Listeners, so you know, I'm reserving judgment here. I'm not sure about this new feature, as I never am with any of Phil's ideas.
Thanks, Laurie. Thanks for the support. If you love it, tweet in, hashtag love it.
Okay.
No, if you like it and you would like to keep it going, then yeah, let us know. And if not, then we'll never speak of it again.
So, is there anything you want to put at the top right here before I jingle us away and we get on with emails or not?
Save it for movie news, man. That's going to be the big thing.
All right, okay. Okay, all right, jingle time.
Okay, first email from Martino Benito. I think he's Italian. Dear Super Bailey Bros, following the non-travelling Super Bailey Bro chat on Radio Oxford, that was me, thought I'd keep you up to date on the mobile phone thing in the cinemas thing.
I think
there's been a rescinding on that policy.
It's a big hot potato right now.
I think they've backtracked because of the backlash. But anyway, he also talks about some other battles that go on in the cinema, not mobile phones, but even with big seats, there can be silent armrest battles during the movie. Do you firmly place your arm and insist on a share?
Oh, tricky.
Or do you just kind of go front or back? Where do you go?
Difficult thing. I mean, it's a bit like, I mean, my most... Can I talk about planes? Am I allowed to say that? Because this happens to me
similar,
on the plane.
I think it's similar, isn't it? Yeah.
It slightly depends on which of you is the most confident person. Because, you know, the confident person comes in without nary a look to the left or the right or behind or whatever, just goes in elbows first and plants firmly, like an A-frame, right in that cinema seat and occupies both armrests. And if that's the situation, you can't really, I mean, a silent battle is not going to go anywhere unless you literally edge them away.
Or you worm your way in. You just kind of slightly apply pressure until they start moving.
That's a bit creepy, isn't it?
Yeah, like a glacier like moving in.
You know, once that territory's been taken, it's back to colonial it's back to colonial policy, man.
It's the Wild
Whoever
West.
Gets there first and plants their flag, yeah. That's it.
I mean, the same thing applies for knees. This is what Martino says. He says, where do you put it? Where's your line? Where's your space within the seat? And he suggests that maybe you should put little markers down, like parking bays.
Wow.
For where you can put your feet and legs. And also, are you allowed to put your feet between
now that is,
the forward seats?
Do you know, that's some of my worst cinema moments have been when I have, you know, taken liberties there. Because looking ahead of me, I can't see a person's, you know, hair or their head or anything, or their arms anywhere nearby. Both armrests in the chair in front of me appear to be empty. So I've done exactly that. I've gone for the leisurely cross legs, foot right down the middle, and left them there for about 20 minutes, only for someone's arm to appear out the side. And maybe, I don't know whether it was a child or just someone who was a little bit on the small side. But yeah, wow, that's an awkward one.
Oh, what did you do? Did you say sorry, or did you kind of just silently retreat?
You just rescind your legs. There is a weird passive-aggressive silent war going on in the cinema between you and everyone else. So.
Anyway, that's pretty much it from Martino Benito.
That's an interesting one. I wonder, the thing is, man, that is a can that could easily be opened. Not necessarily of worms, but of... in more of a Pandora's box of awful cinema altercations. I bet the listeners have got loads of those.
Yeah, if you've got any like that, any silent battles going on, do let us know.
So I've got one here from Graham Phil, first time emailer. He says, hi bros, loving the show despite being late to the party. Only discovered it a few months ago. Pretty sure we only started a few months ago, didn't we?
Yeah, I think he's fine there, don't worry.
You're fine, Graham. You've
great
not missed anything.
Great to have you.
He says some refreshing film opinions and reviews. Thanks. And thank you for the warning about High Rise.
That was, you saw that one, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. He said, I was veering towards your opinion from the trailer. It's had good reviews, so I feel it was a bullet dodge. That is an interesting one because, yeah, as we said before, I really didn't enjoy High Rise at all. But there seem to be critics who see something in it I just can't see. So yeah, well, Graham, I hope I've steered you in the right direction there. And I haven't heard from anyone else who's seen High Rise, actually. I'm the only person I know who's watched it.
Interesting. Apparently, yeah. The director of that film, he sort of turned...
Ben Wheatley.
He sort of turned on to critics because he's not been happy with how they've responded to his film.
Really?
So even though there might be some critics who've loved it, there have been people, I think, who are much more like you, Laurie, who haven't really liked the film or don't think it's as clear as his other movies, and
right.
He sort of rejected their opinion and sort of said, who needs critics?
I've heard him talk, yeah, and he is a slightly odd character. I think it's him and his partner, she's the screenwriter, so there's a kind of protective dynamic going on there. I mean, that's just my opinion. I've got my hands right up in the air, you can't see
he's
it.
He's coming for you now, like.
But yeah, okay. He says he watched Chinatown on our recommendation and was extremely glad that he did.
Hey!
That's the second person who's done that
I'm
one.
Glad about that.
Yeah, we need to keep doing Cheese or Wine, man. There are quite a few more films we should do.
I suggested All the President's Men the other day, didn't I?
Yeah, definitely. I think that needs to be in there. I've got a few on my Steve as well. We'll keep doing those.
Mm.
Okay, he also says Infernal Affairs and The Departed are both amazing.
Hear that, Laurie? Both.
Yeah, B-O-T-H. I do hear that. You know, since we did that podcast, I have thought about going and watching The Departed.
Well, thanks for thinking about it. I really appreciate that.
But it's, you know,
I'm glad I'm occupying a little bit of your brain.
You need to watch Infernal Affairs.
That is true.
I think you'll see
too.
What I mean, because it's such a, it feels like such a complete experience. I didn't think I needed it. But Graham has done both. He says they're both amazing. He was skeptical of The Departed, like me, when he heard it was a Hollywood version of it. But it was very well done. What a cast. He especially liked Alec Baldwin. One last thing. There's been a locally made movie kicking about up here in Aberdeen for a long time. One Day Removals.
Ooh.
We all think it's great fun despite the extremely low budget, but there is a good chance we could be biased. Oh, I see. Mm. I see. And he's given us a YouTube link for that. So do you know what, Graham? We'll post that up on our Twitter feed for all you tweetbots out there. Tweetbots?
Tweetbots is not a good thing. Tweetbots are like the fake people, Laurie.
That just came to me there. What can we call our Twitter people?
Followers?
Sorry, yeah, of course. Yeah, Graham, we'll put that up on Twitter. Guys, check it out. And then he says, keep up the good work. Cheers, Graham. Graham, thanks for your email.
Okay, we got one from David Samuel.
David Samuel, thanks for getting back in touch, David.
He says, hey, bros, thanks for including my email last week. Out of sync with the fortnightly mail and Twitter fest. I was a bit jazzed up on owls for my trip, so we'll tone it down this beak.
Less owl puns, right?
Oh, he made one there. Did you hear it?
What, say it again?
This beak.
This beak.
Not weak, beak.
Well, it was all going so well, David.
Glad you like my competition idea. I thought of it because Phil totally convinced me I need to see Dear Zachary. That's a point for me, I'm saying.
He hasn't seen the film yet, so he doesn't know whether your recommendation's worth
David
it.
Samuel, please update us on your Dear Zachary status. Thank you very much.
Okay, okay.
David Samuel leads on with a movie quote, which we won't spoil here. This is the last call. Last call, by the way.
That's
for
right.
Movie quotes. We're going to be doing the segment next week. Thanks for all those people who sent it in.
Yeah, we've got a good bank, actually, but we could still do more.
We'd love to have more. And the more obscure, the more interesting, the more sort of zany and weird.
I mean, I know there are two listeners I've spoken to who haven't emailed in their quotes yet, and I know they're good ones. So, guys, get on your horse.
Email in. Any hoot. Keep up the filmic confabulations. Lastly, thank you very much for the picture, David. That is a brilliant picture.
Yeah, yeah, nice one, man.
That's David Samuel. Thanks.
We got a tweet from Esther. She said, at Super Betty Rose, my mum hasn't seen Shawshank, as the two times she's walked in while I was watching it, someone was brutally killed. I can't think of that many moments like that in the Shawshank.
They are the worst bits of the movie by far, though, aren't they?
See, but that's just that's a classic example. It's not always just the naughty bits. It's the violent stuff. It's the sweary stuff. There's something about films that draws parents in at the worst moments. Send us more of those.
We'd love to hear them. And poor mum, Shawshank's great.
It's good. I just can't watch it too many times. It's too kind of earnest.
Every single time I catch it on the TV, I end up watching it all the way through. Even when it's got like advert breaks, I still watch it, even though I could easily put the DVD in and cut it down by like an hour.
You just love it.
For some reason, there's something about certain movies that when they're on the TV, even if it's like midway through the movie, you just kind of stay.
I don't rate that film in that kind of way, but hey, how interesting, Phil.
Mm.
And we've also got one from James. This one made me laugh a lot, Phil. I don't know quite how we can communicate this one by audio means.
Okay, well, let's hear it.
Well, he tweeted, it just says, at Super Betty Bros, and then an immediate link to a photo that another Twitter user put up there, which says, that moment when you're watching a movie in IMAX and the PC crashes to Windows 2000.
What's it showing?
It's one of those. It's an error screen that you haven't seen literally for 10 years. It says active desktop recovery with a big
what,
warning.
A big blue one.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's fantastic. I love that. And that's something we should think about, man. Like amazing moments when the cinema has just done a, you know.
What failed you?
Yeah, had a complete meltdown and everything's gone wrong. Like it's blacked out or the audio stopped working or high pitch. You constantly have problems with focus. I get accused of poor eyesight.
Yeah, I got accused once of having bad vision because I thought it was out of focus.
I love that.
He pointed to my glasses and said, maybe it's because, I wasn't happy. I wrote a very stern customer service email.
Practically discrimination, Phil.
Yeah, I always did say, this is discrimination.
And loads of Twitter chit-chat seems to be between you and the listeners this time, Phil. You're on Twitter now.
I am trying to be on Twitter.
It's hard to pick out the highlights, though, because there's been an awful lot of back and forth. I did see you get a minus one in there, though.
There was one from Nicholas who said he wasn't happy with my opinion on Midnight Special.
He's gone to see it.
He loved it. I didn't like it.
Well, that's a minus one for you.
Yeah.
Man, we need to keep count. I'm liking the start here.
It's brutal, man.
Are we starting from this week?
Oh, I guess so. So I'm already on negative one.
Minus one. Keep those coming in, guys. We're super competitive and we need your votes.
Who's the best? It's clearly me. But not this week.
And he also adds, Laurie is trying to advertise Super Betty Bros to the French. Yes, of course. We do have listeners in France. You never know. But he also puts in brackets here, IDF South Beach, !? Do you know what he's talking about there, Phil?
I have no idea. What's IDF?
This is because in my attempt to sound very supercilious and smug and sophisticated, I said I was going to be hanging out on the beautiful south beaches of the Île-de-France. In my head, thinking the island of France. Two problems here, Phil. One, okay. France is not an island. I don't know whether you knew that.
Okay,
it's really quite basic geography. Second, Île-de-France is like a legitimate district of France right in the middle, like completely landlocked. So, yeah, Nicholas, you're right. Yeah, I didn't know what I was talking about. I went to Nice.
It's nice to hear that people are calling you out on your ignorance.
But he does say, have you seen any French movies? And Phil, I think, and I've had other listeners get in touch with me about this as well, we should do a French movie segment.
I mean, I've seen Amelie, so I think I've seen them all, haven't I?
Oh, ha, ha, ha. That's really quite an offensive thing to say.
It's a joke. It's a joke.
It's not a very funny joke, is it? Yeah. You've seen Leon, Phil. That is a French film.
No, that's not.
Yeah, it is. It's Luc Besson and Jean
Reno.
It's
set in New York.
Yeah, but it's a French film, isn't
it? There's one person who's French.
French direction, French actor. Jean Reno is
French. One French person. That doesn't mean it's a French film.
Well, look, any French listeners out there, I would class Leon as a French film.
That's like saying Slumdog Millionaire is like an English film because it's Danny Boyle.
I think it is a British film. Look, let's not get into this debate. Okay. All right. Yeah. Okay. Well, that's what I got on Twitter.
Okay. Moving on. Pigeon Carrier letter from Greeny here. He says he saw Annie Hall. I liked it, but thought the attitude to drugs, particularly cocaine, was a bit too 70s for him.
Okay. Fair enough.
And also found Woody Allen's patronizing dismissing of his various girlfriends a little uncomfortable. But I really liked the presentation style. He liked the little cutaways and the various different bits and bobs, the little quirky things that we mentioned. So
yeah,
there you
right.
go.
We did point that out. Like, that's not exactly groundbreaking, but kind of in a feature film sort of way. I think it must have felt very, very fresh at the time. And it's not really a surprise that a film that's over 40 years old has some quite sort of old-time gender stereotypes in there. And even then, I think Woody Allen is meant to be presented as a bit of an idiot.
Quite egotistical.
Or rather, Woody Allen's character, anyway.
I don't think you'd get a Hollywood lead like Woody Allen.
No, not so much. Well, there we go. I can't tell whether that's an agreement, a thumbs up or a thumbs down.
I think it's an agreement. I think he's on board.
Fine, okay.
Next one, Jajon. He writes, films which have become associated with childhood memories. He totally agrees with us, Laurie. I'm rewatching a lot of animated films with my 3-year-old son. Some of them get me in a totally different way because I need to explain things to him while being confronted by my own childhood memories of the film. So he's talking about like the poignancy experience without necessarily even understanding why. And he gives the example of when the genie is freed in Aladdin and how that like really resonated. And also talking of the genie, he also says there's all these different things that you get when you're a bit older. So there's an impression of Jack Nicholson by the genie, and they even draw him as Jack Nicholson.
That's true.
I had no idea who that weird creepy
guy
was.
No, I'm totally with you. And those little mini caricatures are incredible, aren't they?
They're really good, but they're completely for the adults. You don't pick up on them as a kid. He also talks a bit about foreshadowing, which I think we're going to be doing a feature on at some point.
Yeah,
we're foreshadowing.
We've got so many features. We've got quite a backlog here. And trust us, we're getting them out as fast as we can. We hope that you're glad to hear we've got plenty of rubbish to talk about.
Plenty of good stuff coming up.
But that is going to be a good one.
He talks about people always having heart-to-hearts with a parent or father figure just before they die unexpectedly.
Well, exactly. Yeah. No, totally right. I'm completely with you. It triggers something in you. And you, even if you aren't fully aware of what it is, you're suddenly prepared for a climactic moment. Yeah, that's a good
one. You can feel it rising. Anyway, also, I'm very pleased to read this. +1 point for Phil retrospectively for Moon.
Yes. Well done. I mean, I didn't disagree with you on that one. I'm not sure that
That's a point for me, Lois.
Right.
I'm back to zero.
Congratulations.
he also says he agrees with Russ, +1 to him. So Russ is on.
Well, Russ doesn't. Come on, Russ. If we put Russ in this contest, he'll outstrip us all within 3 episodes.
He's already ahead of us. But he agrees with him about Muppet Christmas Carol. There was a clear reason to that film. Popularising a great story, deciding which Muppet would have best captured the character, he thinks is a really good sort of reason to make that film. Sam the Bald Eagle was fantastic as a British headmaster. Awesome is what he says.
Okay, I've got an email here from Confucius, wise man from the East. Hey, Confucius. He's given us a couple of quotes, which we're not going to say here. This old refrain's getting dull.
Classic,
we're going to have to go to do it next week. My feelings towards a lot of remakes of movies or buying licenses from foreign movies and then translating them to Western actors, Western settings, Western audiences is very, very mixed. And he's given a whole load of examples here. Some of these, Phil, I wasn't even aware of. I wonder whether you will be. He says, The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. Do you know that one from the Swedish one?
I really like the David Fincher film, personally.
Yeah. The Lake House.
What?
I know, right? The Keanu Reeves and Sandra Bullock really bizarre time travel romance.
I have to confess, that's like one of my favourite guilty pleasure films.
Do you love it?
It's so bad, it's great.
It is so bad. And the greatest, well, maybe it's great.
I really enjoy that film. I bought the soundtrack.
It's so very, very strange. But he says that's a remake from a Korean film.
Okay. Maybe that's why it's slightly lost in translation then or something.
Well, possibly. And he's put two names here, neither of which I know I'm going to be able to pronounce correctly. But he says Il Mare or Sea War A, made in 2000. So shall I tweet the links to those?
I wish you could see, listeners, the confusion on Laurie's face.
Well, you know what, Phil? I was going to say, I wish they could see your expression when you read our emails. Just now, the whole of the last email, you had your hand on your hips, like you're some kind of car bobblehead doll.
That's getting your diaphragm right, enunciate and proclaim.
Okay, then he also says, you will not be able to guess which film is also a remake, starring Richard Gere. Come on, give me a few.
Officer and a Gentleman?
Nope.
Primal Fear?
One more guess.
I have no idea.
Shall We Dance?
What, the Jennifer Lopez one?
Yeah, it's a remake, apparently.
No.
Yeah. Apparently, it's a Japanese Shall We Dance, and he's heard a lot about it. He doesn't know the name of it, but apparently that was a Japanese film originally.
Wow.
How cool is that?
Wise man from the East, earning his name again.
He's genuinely full of wisdom. I'm quite impressed. He says, lots of love to you all, your most faithful fan, Confucius.
Thanks, Confucius.
Okay, and very, very last one here from Susie. She says, I watched Gravity the other day, and to be honest, really wasn't that fussed by it.
I've avoided that film.
Have you really? Why?
I just thought either she lives or she doesn't.
This is Emmanuel Lubezki again, the cinematographer for The Revenant, who's famous for his constant tracking shots. And I know that it was, what's his name? Alfonso Cuarón, is it?
Yeah, the director of Prisoner of Azkaban.
Yeah, and this was a major Academy Award winner, wasn't it? People said, how on earth did they do the effects? They wonder whether it'd even get Best Picture. This is Sandra Bullock and George Clooney.
Yeah, it was in the up there, but for me, it just didn't ever appeal.
Interesting. I heard people say you absolutely have to see it in 3D and at the cinema. So I wonder, Susie, whether that's part of the problem. She goes on to say, Sandra Bullock was just annoying to me in this one. Too much panting. That's an interesting comment. It just felt too rhythmic to be genuine.
That is a really interesting
comment. She's saying that apparently Sandra Bullock is meant to be panicking, but the panting is too rhythmic to be
real.
It's
too musical.
Is that something anyone else has picked up on? I wonder if anyone else agrees with you there, Susie.
Musical panting.
That's all the stuff I've got, man. Have you got any more?
That is me. That's a lot of stuff.
Now, loads of stuff. Guys, thanks so much again for your emails and your tweets. Keep them coming. We love to read them. And, you know, keep hitting us up. I'm slightly nervous. We're about to jump into our movie news segment. If you have stuff in the world of movies that you think is, you know, interesting or amazing, then send it our way. We'd love to hear about it. Let's move on. Jingle time. So how are you planning to intro this? But that's Pearl and Dean. That's movie advertising.
No, but you go down at the end.
A news theme needs to tick. Oh, whoa. Hey, this is serious.
Okay, well, you're good at jingles. Do your jingle.
Let's just get on with it. So go on then, Phil. You lead us through it. This is your feature.
I'm going to use a special voice.
James Cameron.
Don't include that. You do not include that.
Come on, get on with it.
James Cameron has announced there's going to be 4 Avatar sequels.
So apparently there's going to be 4 new films in the Avatar world. It was 6 years ago that Avatar, the first one, came out. Do you think Avatar has kind of moved on? Is there new, bigger films?
I cannot for the life of me think what more there is to tell. That was Fern Gully, the epic story, wasn't it?
Dances with Wolves.
Yeah, what's left that wasn't said? They did everything from machines to environmentalism to, you know, future post-apocalypse stuff, to like disabilities, to spiritualism, to like tribal relations. They did literally everything in that film. What more is there left to do?
Well, apparently he's not just got 3 movies worth of new stuff to do. He's got 4. That's the whole point. He's done a whole nother movie to try and deal with this story.
I am very skeptical. But then James Cameron is quite a remarkable filmmaker, and he tends not to turkey too much, right?
Well, he's got like some of the biggest box office returns ever.
But that's because he holds back, doesn't he? He only does mega productions that he's 100% behind, right? So announcing 4 off the bat, I don't know.
The thing which makes me slightly nervous, have you ever heard of the TV show Firefly?
Yes, I have. I've seen it, in fact, in some of the episodes. They're good.
It wasn't so big when it first came out. Massively cult-like following now. Apparently, that was done by Joss Whedon, the director of Avengers. Yeah. He had planned out 12 series for that show, a 12-series arc. And then it got cancelled after the first series, like much to the dismay of all its fans. But all I can think of is, what if one of these Avatar films doesn't do well?
Yeah, well, then the other 3 won't get made. But I'm sure that they will be made with that in mind. I don't think cinema exists anymore without that contingency being involved. I mean, look, what's all the discussion around Batman versus Superman. Have you heard this?
Yeah.
People are saying, like, the box office returns haven't been good. Newspapers relentlessly. Do you know, incidentally, I heard this on a movie show. They were talking about Batman versus Superman, and they talked about how it's dropped something like 70% in box office takings after its first week. And everyone, oh, it's set a new record. But did you see... There were a couple of problems I had with this. Number one, they were telling that story while discussing the fact that it was still number one at the box office. Yeah?
Yeah.
It's not like it had dropped to number 5. It was still number one.
Yeah.
And then secondly, it set a record, but the next highest is like less than 1% higher than that. Do you see what I mean? So it's not that significant a drop. It was still number one. There is, I'm convinced, there is something weird going on.
They're trying to kill the movie.
It really seems that way to me. But either way, there's already been a change made. Apparently, Zack Snyder has brought in a new cinematographer for the Justice League, as if that was the problem.
The cinematography probably was one of the better bits
well,
of the film.
There you go. It just interests me. So if that can happen to Batman vs Superman, I'm sure Avatar, these 4 things will be being built with that in mind. The potential to back out.
Interesting.
Lots of, you know, prenups.
Yeah, I guess so, yeah.
Yeah. Well, so that was that news item number 1? Is that it? Do you want me to say more?
News item number 2.
Okay.
Don't be trying to kill this segment.
I'm not killing it. I just want you to lead me through it. Come on. I'm giving it my all. Did you not hear all the interesting things I just said?
Civil War, the new Captain America film, has been announced to have a runtime the longest of all the Marvel films, with 147 minutes projected.
How do you feel?
147 minutes of Captain America.
Apparently it's brilliant. That's what the critics have been saying in advance. How long is too long? That's what I'm curious about.
I'm counting up the number of minutes I've spent watching superheroes beat people up in the last 10 years. I'm wondering how many weeks of my life it's going to eat up. And when I'm 80, I'm going to look back and think, was Captain America worth it?
I think this one's going to be great.
Do you reckon?
Yeah, it's directed by the Russo brothers. They're the guys who've also directed some of the Community episodes. Have you ever heard of that sitcom?
I've seen bits of one episode, yeah.
I think they're talented guys. I have a feeling this is going to be good. I think you're going to be eating your words.
Well, I've seen trailers for it.
I'm going to print them out and make you eat them.
That's not very nice. I've seen trailers for it, and I think it looks pretty average. It's more trumped up non-conflict. This is my major problem with superhero films, is that they're so... And we said we were going to do a feature on this ages ago, and we still haven't done it. But they're so constrained by the money machine that they cannot do anything with any real consequences. They can't really do any real tension. It's all manufactured. So the trailer is bringing up the fact that you've got Tony Stark beating up Captain America, but I already know they'll get over it. Do you see what I'm saying?
They'll shake hands at the end and have a nice cup of tea.
So, like, actually, it's all about the ride. It's like literally like a roller coaster ride, and I find that tiresome, because how am I supposed to be interested or excited?
Well, you get to see the spectacle.
Yeah, that's exactly it. I'm being sold the spectacle. And look, I will hold my hands up, as I'm doing right now.
Like you're on a roller coaster.
Yeah, exactly. And say, yeah, I enjoy a good bit of spectacle every now and again. But it's hard for me to buy into the hype, because it's all manufactured.
Well, they do say they're telling a massive sort of overarching story, so maybe this one will have some story content.
They said that about Lost. Did you watch that?
I did watch it. I liked it.
Of course they didn't really have a story. They just ended it when they wanted to end it. That was it.
Okay.
Next item.
It has been announced that Men in Black and 21/22 Jump Street are in fact going to do a crossover film. Men in Black 23.
In Black 23. I mean, this kind of sounds like, you remember those Impressionist shows? Where Dead Ringers, do you ever listen to that on the BBC?
Yeah.
What a fantastic show that was. And this sounds like one of their sketches.
Like a joke sketch.
Like with groovy executives on both sides saying, hey guys, let's do these two franchises together. Yeah, let's do a deal. And like it's a joke because suddenly it's aliens and it's high school. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It doesn't make much sense to me.
Well, I think it's quite funny because, you know, 22 Jump Street ended with that sort of parody of all the different alternatives they could do, the follow-up to the sequel. Where could they go from
That's
here?
That's true, actually.
And then the one thing which they didn't have was a Men in Black crossover. What I think could be really good is the Men in Black world and all the seriousness of that and trying to be kind of cool and edgy. And basically you got Jonah Hill and Channing Tatum being rubbish agents.
Well, so is it Tommy Lee Jones and Will Smith back again?
No, so they're not returning.
They're not at all, really?
No.
How can you have Men in Black without Will Smith?
Interesting, there you go. Can you?
I don't know what's happened. I feel like he's kind of on the wrong side of Hollywood at the moment because I never see him in anything good anymore.
He's going to be in the Suicide Squad movie.
Is he, really?
Which is the kind of the villain team-up of the DC universe.
Depends whether you think a superhero movie is a good thing or a bad thing, really, doesn't it?
I definitely think his star is waning a bit. I think he needs to find a good project. I think After Earth didn't help his streak.
No, break. Sure. I have to admit, I really like Channing Tatum and Jonah Hill together. I think they've got good chemistry and they've nailed that dynamic really well. I'm just curious to see how they'll slot into that world. And without Will Smith and Tommy Lee Jones, that's what doesn't make any sense to me. Like, the 22 Jump Street franchise is bringing its bankable stars around which the franchise is built.
Yeah.
If you're saying Men in Black is not bringing Tommy Lee Jones and Will Smith, then what is it bringing to the table? Just aliens and suits.
And also the whole setup and everything like that.
It's
like
not
the...
strong enough. It needed... Oh, come on, those films were built around Will Smith.
Interesting. Interesting premise you've got there for a theory.
Is that the end of that one?
Well, what else is there to say? It's a trial. It's a pilot, Laura. Come on.
Yeah,
it doesn't have to be perfect.
No, it's good. Like, I think it's going better than I expected. So there you go. I'll be interested to see what comes of it. Do I do a news story? Can I do one?
If you've got one, yeah.
Are you ready for this? I'm going to beat you with my news anchor voice. You ready?
Okay. Always competitive.
Yeah, of course.
Breaking news on the casting of young Han Solo.
Ooh.
This is the story that they believe Alden Ehrenreich is the front runner.
Could you make that sound more villainous?
Oh, yeah. Well, it's a great name, I think. I love... And he's a talented actor. This is the guy from Hail Caesar, who played Hobie the cowboy, and he starred in a film called Beautiful Creatures, which may or may not be coming up in a minute or two, Phil.
Okay.
But it looks as though he's the front runner for young Han Solo in the Star Wars spin-off prequel thing.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that whole movie in general, but I do like him. I think he's a talented actor.
Yeah, I mean, he was quite charming, wasn't he? I thought his main appeal in Hail Caesar was more that he was quite sort of innocent and came across as a let's do our best kind of guy.
I'd say I wouldn't want that role if I was him.
Why?
Because you can only really fail.
Do you think
so? Following Harrison Ford as an iconic character.
Well, technically you're not following Harrison Ford so much as...
Proceeding.
Yeah.
what a silly thing to say. Of course he's following Harrison Ford.
Yeah, I know. Sorry, it was just a little joke there, Phil. Yeah, I don't know. I'm not entirely convinced. And maybe, as you say, the main reason is that I'm not convinced about the film. Jack Rayner was in the list for Young Han Solo. He's in Sing Street, which incidentally is out in 2 days' time.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and you've got to watch this film. Everyone will love it. I almost guarantee it. It's bittersweet, it's funny, it's also heartwarming, beautiful music. Go and watch it. Seriously.
If I go see that one and I like it, do I have to give you a point?
Yes, you do. It's
well,
so good.
I won't like it then.
It's really, really good. I recommend that one. But yeah, and he's magnificent in it, Jack Rayner, a really young talent. I think he has the charisma and the sort of bravado and the power just in his general bearing on screen that fits Han Solo a lot more. Because he was rakish and refined, but he gave the impression, this is going to sound really lame, but like panther-like. Maybe I've got a Jungle Book on the brain, but it's in like quite sort of elegant and lazy, but if he needed to, he could pull out the big guns,
sort of that aloof power.
Exactly, aloof and more dangerous than they look kind of thing, whereas Alden Ehrenreich doesn't seem that way to me. He seems more on the surface. But Jack Rayner, yeah, that's just my thought.
I think both of us though feel that's an unnecessary movie.
Yeah, it's a complete waste of time, but let's not let that get in the way of an important news item.
Movie news.
Yeah.
Well, it's been great having you, Laurie.
Is this it? That's the end
of
the news?
Yeah, that's the end of movie news.
It's quite short news. Is that your end?
Well, yeah, you know, like the newscasters do those like funny little
but they
jokes.
Do a farewell as said.
So from everyone here at Super Belly Bros HQ, thank you and good night.
Yeah, bye-bye. Have a boop, great
boop,
night.
Boop, 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 boop. Something like that. Beep, boop, beep, boop, 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 boop. Oh, man. Well, listeners, you decide whether that was a success. It's depending on your votes to survive.
So oh don't, man, on
don't
the
be shy.
Four already.
What have we been watching this week?
Very good, man. Have you been practicing?
I actually have.
No, you haven't. Have you really?
Yeah, I feel really bad. Like when you're I don't do it very
were you
well.
Intimidated yeah. by mine 2 weeks ago?
I'm good.
No, that was really good. Hey, well, it's what we've been watching this week. We've watched a whole load of movies, and I bet you cannot wait to hear what we thought of them. So, Phil, what is up first for you? What have you been watching?
So I've been watching Looper, the sci-fi film from 2012, I think it was, starring Joseph Gordon-Levitt and Bruce Willis, directed by Rian Johnson.
This is the guy who is now in the frame for Star Wars Episode 8, yeah?
The guy who's directing it as we speak.
There we go.
Yeah, I thought I'd check out one of his previous movies and just sort of see whether or not I could tell what sort of thing he's going to bring to the Star Wars movie. I have to say, I was mostly watching it to see what he could do with it. And I have to say, I think this is a brilliant film. If you're wanting to see, sort of be reassured about where Star Wars is going, I think this is a great film to watch.
You reckon?
I think Looper...
I think
has
a lot of people are concerned about exactly that.
I think Looper is flawed and it doesn't quite work, but I think most of its flaws and problems lie with the difficulties that come with a time travel story.
Right, okay. In other words, it's not the director's fault if it's confusing.
Well, he did write it.
Oh, right.
But I think any sort of time travel film is always going to be confusing.
Yeah, sure, sure.
So the premise is Joseph Gordon-Levitt is a looper. What he does is he kills people who are sent back from the future because in the future, killing is illegal.
Right.
And then one day...
But hold on. In the present, which is the future, these people can't be killed because it's illegal. So they send them back in time. So they can die?
Yep. So people in the future send it back to Joseph Gordon-Levitt, who kills them and disposes of the body.
In the past.
So that in the past, so that you can't find the body. So it's a way of killing somebody without being found out
very
in the future.
Very clever. And is this government sanctioned or is it illegal?
No, it's the mob.
Right,
very shady.
Right.
And then one day, somebody gets sent back and it's Bruce Willis. And who's Bruce Willis? But also Joseph Gordon-Levitt. It's the same guy. So he's the person from the future who's been sent back for him to kill. Is himself, but a future version of himself.
As in Bruce Willis is an older Joseph Gordon-Levitt?
Yeah.
In what universe?
Well, funnily enough, they actually do a bit of makeup stuff to Joseph Gordon-Levitt's face to make him look like
Does it
Bruce
work?
Willis. It sometimes works, sometimes it's a bit like...
What
oh,
a
what's...
really, really weird thing to do.
They do a lot to his lip and bottom lip and his chin.
Why would they not just get Bruce Willis to play himself twice and digitally alter him so he looks younger?
No, that'd be ridiculous.
Do you think so?
More ridiculous.
But Phil, it works so well in X-Men 3, The Last Stand.
All that's just some extra stuff. So in case you haven't seen it, I would check it out. It's on streaming services and things like that. What I think is really good about Looper is it really visualizes the world and it explains quite a lot of the setting of the world and quite a lot of exposition without it feeling too weighty. So even all of that feels quite heavy, doesn't it?
Yeah,
what I just explained
does.
To you. It doesn't feel too heavy in the movie. Is visually really stunning. It's got a very distinct visual world style. Lots of the things that weren't so good about the new Star Wars
yeah.
like it wasn't very good at establishing a world. It wasn't very good about exposing what's happening.
That was what you said. It was quite hard to understand the wider conflict.
Yeah, exactly. I think Rian Johnson is going to do a great job about fleshing out these worlds.
Right, okay.
He's already got some good characters and he's quite good, I think, at directing character and emotion. There's a lot of good emotion in this film, even if the story doesn't quite work, doesn't piece together perfectly. I think the characters are good and memorable and there's distinctive flair to his direction and it's a good action movie. It's
engaging.
Performance
is good.
Yeah, I think he probably knows what he's doing. Joseph Gordon-Levitt wasn't really a massive star when he was doing these films with Rian Johnson and he managed to draw out big performances. And he also managed to work with Bruce Willis, who apparently is not the easiest person
to direct. No, I can imagine.
And he gets a good performance out of Bruce Willis as well.
Well, there we go. Lots of hope for Star Wars, but also sounds like a good film. I admit I've sort of begged off watching this one. I think almost entirely because of the title, now I think about it. It's not inspiring and a bit confusing. And when I hear about it, it sounds a bit like 12 Monkeys, but a budget version. The more you talk about it, yeah, I'm won over.
I think you'd give it a go. It's definitely a fresh film.
Okay, good. All right, I'm up for that. Incidentally, I'm not so sure about Joseph Gordon-Levitt, full stop.
Interesting. Maybe we need a movie court on that.
Okay, my turn?
Well, let me give a grade. I'll give it a B+. No, actually, I'll give a B to Looper.
B to Looper. Okay, I'll check that one out, man. Right. I have been watching, well, lots of films. I've actually got 6 here. I've done this again. Do you want me?
Why do you do this every time?
Well, so
decide
can I
beforehand. It's not like we're doing this live, Laurie.
No, that's true. Can I give you, I need to ask your opinion on this one because 2 of the ones on this list I turned off before finishing, but I felt like I got enough of a vibe from them to talk about.
No,
them.
I hate when you do that.
Do you really hate that?
What films are they?
Well, so they're Beautiful Creatures, which stars Alden Ehrenreich.
Okay.
And Silk, which stars Michael Pitt, who is a very bizarre actor, and Keira Knightley.
Okay, both of those don't sound particularly...
Can I squeeze them in right at the end, together?
We'll see how they go. Let's do the other ones first.
So then there are 4
And then you're going to edit them out if they're rubbish.
Of course. Why don't I do Now You See Me?
The Magician film.
Correct. Which is directed by Louis Leterrier, famed for the Edward Norton Hulk film, and The Transporter with Jason Statham.
Okay.
So I don't think he's exactly covered himself in glory. And
they've been moderately successful films, haven't they?
Yeah. And I don't think the film is particularly incredible either. So this is an all-star ensemble cast. Woody Harrelson, Jesse Eisenberg, Isla Fisher. What's the Franco guy, younger brother?
Tim Franco.
Ben Franco.
James Franco.
Not James Franco. His younger brother is in it. And then also Mark Ruffalo and Morgan Freeman.
Michael Caine.
Like, it's a serious ensemble cast. I'm quite confused about how he managed to attract so many stars to it. But the basic premise is there are these 4 street performers. They mysteriously get brought together by these tarot cards who kind of lead them all to the same location and convinces them to take part in this amazing illusion, this amazing magic trick.
They become the 4 horsemen or something like
that. That's right, they are dubbed the 4 horsemen. They don't know who it is who's hiring them, but the person keeps on giving them instructions to perform these incredible tricks. They wow the world, and all of a sudden the tricks involve loads of money being redistributed, being apparently stolen or apparently leached from very rich people's bank accounts. So the FBI get involved, Q Mark Ruffalo, who tries to track them down and stay one step ahead of them, so I keep going with it. Enlisting Morgan Freeman's character, who is an ex-musician who makes his business out of revealing how amazing illusions are done.
Is that good? Is there good money in that?
Apparently so. At one point he says, "I stand to earn $5 million in Morgan Freeman's voice, not my voice, just there. Just to be clear. So yeah, what a confusing film. And to be fair, it's a pretty enjoyable ride. You know what you're going to get with a film like that. You're going to see some slightly smug magicians do their slightly smug acts in the movie. You're going to see Mark Ruffalo look perennially out of breath and disheveled and a bit confused. You yourself are going to be mystified and trying to do the who done it or how done it. Is that what it is? How do you do that? That's what they say for Arrested Development. Sorry, just ignore me. You're going to be doing that. And I think it delivers on a lot of that stuff. The main thing I have to throw at this film is it cheats, and that's annoying.
Interesting. And do you want to expand on that or no?
Well, not really, but I'll put it this way. If you're watching a magic trick in a film, like films are magic, special effects are magic tricks, right?
Yeah.
The stuff isn't really happening on screen. The explosion's not real. You know, they do it with computers.
It's an illusion.
Stuff. Yeah, exactly. And all the best illusionists, although they won't give away their tricks, will say part of the reason it's really hard to figure out how a trick is done is that the actual way it's done is often incredibly tedious and worked out or very long and involving. And you find yourself thinking, why would anyone bother doing this for like a 1-minute clip? And that's kind of spoils what's on screen for you. Maybe I can't say much more than that, but I was frustrated with it by the end.
I remember seeing this one in the cinema. I think we saw this one together, actually, didn't we?
I have no idea. I don't remember, honestly.
And I think we watched it and there were subtitles on the movie. We went to an audio description.
Oh, did we? By accident? I love it when that happens.
I remember thinking it was fun, but the ending and the reveal, so to speak, of the magic tricks was slightly disappointing.
Yeah, it's a shame because I thought the cast actually did a really good job. I've read other people criticising the film for you not really caring about anyone involved because the editing is very choppy and very fast. They spend a lot more on chase scenes than they do on actual magic.
Yeah.
There's a lot of chasing which gets you start to feel a bit breathless by the end. But I quite enjoyed the ride. And when the actors are on screen delivering their pieces, they appear to have actual chemistry, which is all good. Am I making sense with that?
Yeah, yeah.
So yeah, I think there are things to enjoy, but ultimately it's a letdown. And I'd probably have to give it a B-. Worth mentioning because there's about to be a sequel.
Yeah, there is. You get to see Mark Ruffalo look like he's just woken up again. Every single time.
I know, that's his thing, isn't it? He's good at it as well. But I don't... It wrapped stuff up, even though it was a bit unsatisfying. It still wrapped things up pretty neatly at the end of Now You See Me. So I wonder what kind of annoying device they're going to use to spin it out. Maybe they'll do your sequel trick that you hate.
Peel back the ending
yeah,
and make
exactly.
it ineffective.
So, yeah, someone will... Yeah, well, I won't give anything away. But, but yeah, okay, there's that.
I'm going to keep with the Joseph Gordon-Levitt theme.
I didn't know we were on that theme.
I know, I don't mention my themes to you. You make fun of me before them.
Okay.
I went to see, in my house, 500 Days of Summer again.
Right.
I love this movie. I think it's a fantastic movie.
Oh, you
really
and I
love
are about
it.
To disagree.
That's fine, because I want people to disagree. I'm going to be a little bit provocative here.
Fine.
And make a
Do
very
it.
Bold claim. I think, basically, if you don't like this movie, it's because you haven't understood it properly.
Oh, Matt, are you really saying
and
that?
I hate people who do that. So I'm very, I know
oh,
what I'm
hold
playing
up
with,
a mirror.
I'm holding, yeah, I'm playing with fire right now. I know that there's people judging me. So for anyone who hasn't seen 500 Days of Summer, it's a retelling of a man's relationship with this girl, Summer, and kind of the ups and downs and twists and turns. And it's told in non-chronological order. It's got some quite quirky bits. It's very reminiscent of Annie Hall. It's been inspired by it.
I just want to add in at this point while Phil takes a breath, I don't think it is anything like Annie Hall.
Not even reminiscent in style?
Nah.
So dismissive.
Yeah, sorry.
I think you agreed with me when we were talking about Annie Hall.
I agreed with you in the specific context that Joseph Gordon-Levitt talks to the camera and has little quirkier sides, but it's not even in the same league, I don't think.
Okay, fine, that's fine. I've spoken to lots of people about this film. I really like it. I've been very vocal about it with friends and things like that. And continuously, every single time I've heard somebody say, I don't like that film. I've asked them why, and they said, oh, I hate the main character. I hate Joseph Gordon-Levitt's character, or I hate Zoe Deschanel's character.
Right.
That's what they hate about the film. That's kind of the entire point. Both of them are flawed characters who you're not meant to like. And actually, I think probably the reason why you hate them is because it reminds you, and maybe this is a bit bold, it reminds you of yourself and your own sort of similarities in relationships you might have had.
I think it's very interesting everything you said, because I'd be one of these people who you claim don't understand it, I think. My overwhelming feeling from watching the movie is that I think the director thinks you're supposed to sympathise with Joseph Gordon-Levitt, and I don't.
No, so interestingly, I think the first time I watched it, I agree with you. Actually, second time watching, I think it's being very critical of his character.
Do you think so?
Yeah, massively, because it's entirely his misunderstandings that play out in the film. There's actually a YouTube video that I came across, which I really liked.
You think it articulates it well?
Yeah, very much so. I will tweet a link out to it.
Okay. You need to give it a grade. What's the grade?
I'm going to give it an A.
An A? Oh,
I really like...
Yeah, I can tell you're being provocative, so I'm going to let you go with this one, Phil. But yeah, I find it hard to enjoy that movie. I think my impression is you're supposed to sympathise with Joseph Gordon-Levitt, but actually... Or maybe actually that's not quite fair. I have met many people who do sympathise with
Yeah,
Joseph
I agree.
Gordon
There's Levitt. Lots of people who do, but I don't think you're meant to.
I can't get behind that. And the girl's character, you know, yeah, she's not sympathetic either. I don't know. I think it's just a messy film. I don't find it enjoyable. Okay,
just to say, before Laurie starts it, if you're annoyed by anything I said, I'd like to hear from you. Uh-huh. I'd really enjoyed reading those emails.
You're trying to poke. My next one, Phil, is Mars Attacks.
Tim
Burton.
Exclamation
mark. Yeah, Tim Burton directs. What a bizarre movie. This was released in 1996. It is a story in which aliens from Mars come and sort of invade planet Earth. For a while, people think they're going to be friendly, and then it turns out they're not friendly. So it's about how do we survive and or beat the alien invaders. And it features the most ridiculous ensemble cast I think I've ever seen, Phil.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, so we're talking Pierce Brosnan, Sarah Jessica Parker, Nack Jickelson, Jack Nicholson, Annette Bening, Danny DeVito, Martin Short, Natalie Portman, Tom Jones, with the most amazing cameo I've seen in a long time.
Tom Jones.
He was fantastic. I was so glad to see him in it. But like, the stars just keep coming. Every time you think you've seen all the ones the film has to offer, another one pops up. Glenn Close. And even Jack Black as well.
Really?
Yeah, it's just non-stop celebrity. Not even cameos. It's proper ensemble because they all have more than a cameo role, but much less than an actual role in the film. Except Jack Nicholson, I guess, who stars as the President of the United States.
Oh, right. Okay.
It's a very odd film. The tone of it is all over the place. And I believe it is sending out old sort of B-movie alien horror films from the 1950s. In particular, it sends up Plan 9 from Outer Space. Have you come across this?
I haven't, but it's ringing bells.
It is an Ed Wood movie, and Ed Wood, I won't go into detail here, is a famous director from 50s Hollywood, basically famed for making terrible movies, but relentlessly doing it and very cheerfully.
Did Johnny Depp do a movie where he was playing Ed Wood?
Yeah, he stars Ed Wood, which I actually also think was directed by Tim Burton.
So oh, right, okay.
There's some funny things going on there. But yeah, I don't know really quite what to make of this movie, Phil. You actually joined me while I was watching the last sort of half hour of it, and it was a bizarre experience.
It was crazy. I just saw the last bit, and I was like, what's going on?
What is going on? It was one of those ones where, as a kid growing up, I think I used to go into DVD rental shops, or I don't know, maybe I just used to walk down a corridor or something, and there would be posters somewhere, but the cover used to always slightly freak me out, and I couldn't figure out what it was. Was it a movie or was it something else? It gave me the impression that it wasn't even really a real film.
It's the ones with the big kind of alien head with the brains.
The big brain alien head.
Bulbous eyes and things.
Yeah, and maybe that's because it was trying to send up this B-movie thing. And it was very, very odd. It's kind of comedic and surreal. It's got all slices of American life. In some ways, it's amazingly similar in the structure to Independence Day, which was released the same year.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, but it's almost like the joke version. Have you seen Scary Movie or Teen Movie?
Yeah.
It's a bit like that, or it feels
like
that
a parody.
Way. Yeah, I checked up some of the production details, and it's been script after script after script. People have come in and out of the project. It went through all kinds of problems with budget. Tim Burton wanted the aliens to be animated stop motion, but they ended up being 3D, and then it nearly won an award for the 3D. It's just one of these sort of odd history pieces for the movie industry. I don't think I can say that I enjoyed it.
Are you a fan of Tim Burton, though?
This film is more enjoyable than many other Tim Burton films I've seen, where he's just too Tim Burton-y. And it's a bit too predictable. Like, you know that Helena Bonham Carter will turn up with crazy hair and an Essex accent. Yeah. And Johnny Depp will also try and be posh, and he'll do his thing where his eyelids shoot up into the top of his head. I'm glad to say that neither of those things are in this film.
Do you think it was quite refreshing seeing Tim Burton away from sort of a gothic
environment? Yeah, I mean, for example, I said to you, right at the end of the film, you have this shot of a building block which has kind of been cut in half for some reason or another. And what you have is a really nicely framed shot of someone walking up to all these apartment blocks that are cut in half, so you can see it like a doll's house.
Yeah, yeah.
And they've all got different paint. And it's actually quite a bizarrely beautiful image. And it takes vision for someone to imagine that and film it. Like, in the scene of total destruction and chaos, to have this weird doll's house-like beautiful moment. And you can see why, in 1996, Tim Burton would have had all the clout to have the audacity to suggest to a major Hollywood studio that a spoof 1950s B-movie was going to go down well with audiences, which it didn't.
Did it not go down well?
No, it was considered a bomb. I think it didn't lose money, but it certainly didn't return much.
Because I thought it had this sort of cult-like following and it was quite a big film.
I should think it does, but that'll be DVD and streaming.
Interesting. What grade would you give it?
I think I'm going to, I almost feel like I need to do a U and say for what it was trying to do and all that kind of stuff. But I probably think I did this before, didn't I? Maybe a B minus again.
Okay.
Because it certainly was quite funny. The Tom Jones scenes are hilarious.
I did find that funny. That was very unexpected.
And it is quite tightly scripted. There are some really nice little lines in there that are almost throwaway. Like, there's a bit where an alien is committing a video message to Earth and it does a circular motion with its hand. And one of the characters, Lucas Haas, Leonardo DiCaprio's friend, who works at a Dunkin' Donuts, said, "That's the international sign of the donut." Which doesn't make any sense at all. And like, it cuts away immediately at that point and just littered through it at moments of kind of brilliance. So yeah, B minus.
My last film for what we've been watching this week, it is Rango, the Johnny Depp film directed by Gore Verbinski. It's an animated film in which Johnny Depp plays a thespian chameleon.
Thespian?
Yeah, or something like that.
No, thespian's a Shakespearean actor.
I know, Laurie. Don't you be patronising me.
Right.
No, he is a thespian actor who ends up, through various means, joining a sort of frontier Western community who believe him to be a sheriff.
Right.
And a sort of
defender.
Because he acts defender.
Well at it, you mean?
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
And so it's kind of a bit like Ants, in the sense that Ants takes place actually in a park and it's in modern day. even though it's like all this sort of colonial Western frontier type setting.
So there's a couple of weird things even in that setup. Gore Verbinski is in Pirates of the Caribbean, man.
Yeah, big director of Pirates of the Caribbean. This is his sort of a very bizarre film.
It doesn't seem like the kind of thing he would take on.
No, but I have to say, it's such a fresh animation. I can't really put my finger on why I like it, but there's something about this film which I keep on coming back to and thinking, oh, this is, there's something in here. Visually, it's absolutely stunning. I can't believe it didn't get more accolade for the way it's animated. The lighting in particular is sensational. It just looks just about photorealistic.
What was the studio?
Nickelodeon and Paramount Pictures.
Not exactly DreamWorks or Pixar.
No, exactly. And it's got a completely distinct style to any other animated film I can think of. What I find really interesting about this film is every single time I watch it, I basically find myself thinking this would make a great live action Western where you take out all the talking animals and you just play it straight.
What, as people?
Yeah, as people. I can imagine it being a really interesting dynamic film. It's got a great cast. It's got Bill Nighy. It's got Johnny Depp. It's got Alfred Molina, the guy who plays Dr. Octopus in Spider-Man 2.
Yeah. He's great. I like him.
Isla Fisher as well. But all of those big celebrity names seem to melt away a bit and they just become really good voice performances.
You see, the problem, if I may just throw a single stone at what you've just said there, Phil, if you're saying you could strip away the animal stuff and make just a good Western out of it, then what that suggests is there's not much point to the animal thing and that isn't really a part of it.
Well, it's kind of, you know how in Zootropolis or Zootopia we were saying how it's almost like it's a regular movie dressed up as a kid's movie?
Yeah.
That's kind of what I feel with Rango. I feel like it's an actually quite adult movie, an interesting movie about standing up against business tycoons and tyrants and things like that, believing in yourself, all those sort of quite mature themes, and there's quite a lot of fear and scariness, and even the presentation is quite, it's playing with quite a lot of adult tropes. So they've got these three little birds as narrators of the film announcing that Rango's going to die at the end, which go completely over a kid's head. But me, as sort of a cinema fan, I'm watching it and it's kind of baffling that this film got made, basically.
Yeah, well, the way you're describing it, it doesn't sound to me like it really would appeal to that many people except you, Phil.
Well, I don't know. It's one of those films which, as like I said, I can't really exactly put my finger on why it works so well for me and why I really like it. And I feel like it's one of those films which people don't really seem to mention, or it seems to have skirted people by.
Okay, what's the grade?
I would give it, it's not a perfect movie, it is very weird, but I like it, so I'm going to give it a B.
Okay, a B. Well, listeners, if you've seen that one, let us know. I mean, I can't remember well enough to give a grade, but I slightly doubt how broad its appeal would be. So my last one, I've got so many to say, but I'll go for this one because it's just weird. I saw 9 to 5, starring Dolly Parton, Jane Fonda and Lily Tomlin. What odd film that was. It's one of these ones where I looked ahead at the movie schedule on TV and I just popped it on there thinking, yeah, that sounds like it might be a kind of 80s classic. It was 1980, I think. So it's just coming out of the swinging 70s. Is that what it's called? Or is it the swinging 60s?
Swinging 60s.
What's the 70s?
Like the rocking 70s.
The rocking 70s. Okay, someone can correct me, I'm sure. And it's about, well, it sort of appears to be about Jane Fonda. She begins in it, and she is someone who's just starting work as a secretary in an unnamed big company in the city. And it's about these three women, all of whom are secretaries on this floor. And what I like about it is it does that classic 80s thing of it being, let's get to the top. Come on, life is all about getting to that office, getting to the top floor, getting your ideas heard, wearing those suits, drinking that coffee, doing the commute first thing in the morning. Life is, yeah, business.
Does it have a montage?
Yeah, of course it does. Like it's, and I think it's so amazing. I'd love to do a little thing on the 80s there, because films had such a different outlook, I believe they did, when that was being made. And especially films like that, like you think of films like Working Girl, which is obviously a parallel with this one, even The Secret of My Success, do you remember that?
Oh yeah.
Michael J. Fox. So many films about making it in the city, and especially being downtrodden by the boss.
Yeah.
And in particular, in this case, it's about how these women are terribly treated by a stuffy, sexist manager, misogynist manager. That's interesting, for a film made in 1980, like, it's got loads of modern themes in there.
Has it?
Yeah, about these women being kept down awfully and the kind of awful prejudice that they're exposed to and the fact that their ideas are well heard. I do think, when you watch it, some of the ideas that the women come up with during the course of the movie, one of them, for example, that's a brilliant idea that the president of the company loves, is colour coding the accounts. And I kind of think...
Right, okay.
They could have given the women a little bit more, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
To give to the bosses. And not that that's a bad idea, I just kind of thought it's unlikely to massively appeal
in in its success.
It's a bit patronizing, I say it.
Maybe that's the 80s.
Well, exactly, that creeps through, but it was just interesting, I thought. But yeah, the basic plot is these women are all treated badly, and as they keep getting treated badly, they have a night together where they laugh about all the awful things in their workplace and what they would do to get on top and how they get back at their boss, and then kind of situations happen.
Key movie.
Do you know what I think? I won't give anything away because I was genuinely surprised by the turns that the plot took as it went on. I did not see it coming. And I think I was kind of dazzled by Dolly Parton. I was just so surprised to see her in a film. I don't think she's a very good actress, but she's just so Dolly Parton. There's no one else like her, man. You know, she outguns Jane Fonda for screen presence, which is very difficult to do.
Wow, okay.
It was just odd, odd, odd. All three of them are very odd in it. There were some laughs in there. There's one scene that features the most giggling I've ever come across in the cinema.
Like genuine giggling?
Like non-stop. Like a scene that's about 8 minutes long, I'd say is 75%. Like literally like that.
Oh, man.
Like kind of sexist giggling, right?
Oh, right.
Like it's unbelievable. But yeah, wow, what a film.
So the question I have is, did this film get made as a response to Dolly Parton's
The song 9 to 5?
Or well, it was is this played at the beginning to the film?
It was played at the beginning and the end of the film, but so she didn't sing once during the film.
Okay, that really weird.
It is really, really weird.
Are they completely separate and they just coincidentally called 9 to 5?
I wouldn't be at all surprised if this movie was greenlit because Dolly Parton had written the song and agreed to star in it.
Okay, maybe that's why she got the gig. It's
well, exactly.
You won't sign away this song unless you get...
It's No Working Girl. I mean, that is an awesome film.
That's the one with Harrison Ford in it.
Ford, Sigourney Weaver, and Melanie Griffiths, all of whom turn in fantastic performances. And that film is funny. It's got some semi-serious messages in there. It's got an almost kind of Saturday Night Fever-like portrait of different classes and different demographics. But this film, it ain't, no.
From what I remember of Working Girl, you know, what the shoulder pads.
Oh, yeah, right. The like amazing
the
kind
super
of big
80s.
Suits.
Yeah.
No, so that I don't think that fashion had quite come in at this point. There are some pretty amazing, you know, sartorial decisions in there. But yeah, have I given you an accurate enough picture of this?
Yeah, you have.
It's funny but weird. So I think I'm going to have to give it probably a C. It's not the greatest film.
Are you laughing with it or against it? Or at it, even?
I'm kind of just amazed by it, baffled by it, maybe.
Shocked laugh.
Not shocked, just bemused. Dolly Parton, she can't... I don't think she's a great actress, but there's something about her on screen that you
charismatic.
Just...
Charismatic.
Yeah, it's amazing. And that accent is just... She's just so Dolly Parton. I can't think of anything else to say.
Okay, thanks, Larry.
Good.
Do you want to do your little ones?
Well, what do you think about this? Is this going to provoke a bad discussion?
I think if you haven't seen it to the end, I'm not sure you can have a full opinion.
Well, I don't claim to have a full opinion. There are reasons why I switched them both off.
Okay, I think you have to be honest about how much you watched and
why
you switched it off.
So the film, shall I start with Silk? Silk is a film starring Michael Pitt and Keira Knightley and Alfred Molina, or Molina, Dr. Octopus that you referred to earlier. It's about a guy who lives in 19th century France, and the small town he's in, a silk merchant decides to start up the silk mill again. But they need to go and get amazing silkworms to create the right kind of silk.
Makes sense? Movie plot.
I know, right? Yeah. Michael Pitt is this young man who's chosen to do this and go and represent this company. He has just got married to Keira Knightley, who he's obviously really in love with. And then he goes on really long trips to Japan, basically, to go and get these silkworms. And the story is he has affairs with Japanese concubines, and that interrupts his relationship with his wife.
Oh, right. That sounds cheery.
Yeah. And I switched it off because Michael Pitt is one of the strangest screen presences I've ever seen.
Who is Michael Pitt?
I found him so irritating. So the thing people may have seen him in is he had a kind of a small role in The Village, and he's been in Boardwalk Empire, the TV show. I think he was in Dawson's Creek for a while as well. But his voice and his performance, I just found it unbearably irritating. He speaks very slowly and very clearly, as if everything he says is significant. But he's like talking about the day that he's had. Do you know what I mean?
I had eggs.
Yeah. And I just couldn't cope with it at all. And it was so slow. They didn't even show off any of the beauty of their surroundings. Like, you go to Japan, there are some beautiful things you can show when you're dealing in silk or whatever. They didn't do that. Instead, they did really weird shots of him in the Arctic where he grew a beard, and they did a shot of him shaving for no reason. And I think it's supposed to be dripping with a kind of exotic, romantic, subversive kind of feel. I didn't feel that. I just felt irritated and confused. And I thought, you know what? This film goes on for another 2 hours. Forget it.
Is that so right? How far into it did you turn it off?
I felt like I watched about 20 minutes of it and I got the measure of it and I thought, that's enough. And in a way, maybe that's a shame because Keira Knightley appeared to be doing something different than she usually does and actually was coming across fairly sympathetically. But yeah, didn't enjoy it, turned it off. Okay, how's that for half review? Is that okay? I didn't give it a grade? Is
you
that
can't give it a grade.
Nor will I. Is that acceptable?
Yeah, that's fine, move on.
Second one, Beautiful Creatures. This will be really quick. I watched this one because it stars Alden Ehrenreich before he appears to have hit the big time in Hail Caesar. You know, there's a buzz around this guy. I thought I'd like to see one of his early works. This is kind of a deep South Twilight / Harry Potter, can I call it that?
As in teen young audience thing.
Yeah, so teenagers in a high school doing all their high school relationships. They're all to do with cliques and
being in love,
phonyism and your hopes and dreams of college and everything else. And then, of course, there being magic buried behind all this that sets you apart from all your annoying classmates.
Which makes you special. Like
yeah, exactly.
Snowflake.
Because they've got such small and ridiculous ambitions. And hey, I read books. So do you know
I
what?
Deserve magical powers.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so that wasn't doing it for me. That's the reason I switched off, because I thought, and Jeremy Irons is in it. Do you know what, remember when I told you?
He
loves a turkey. He loves these weird fantasy films where he plays this Texan kind of vampire-like guy. It's really odd. He wears a big white suit. His Texan accent is not good.
Okay.
And so that was it. I got the measure of it about half an hour in. I thought, you know, I'm not really in the mood for another teen magical film, so I thought, I've seen enough. What I wanted to see was Alden Ehrenreich, and he's good, man. There's something that his love interest says about him is, you can't help it, can you?
What?
Fitting in everywhere, is what she says, which I thought was quite a nice little line, and I realised as she said it that it is true. Even though this guy is kind of a slightly odd-looking, and he's kind of brash, he is charming. He has a natural charm about him, and he's good on the screen. He can deliver a monologue that is quite compelling, and he can relate to other people on screen really, really nicely. I think he's a good performer, but that's as far as I got into the film.
Right, here's what I'm wondering. Is it better or worse than Twilight?
Oh, it's worse than Twilight. Twilight is actually, I want to do that as a what we've been watching, because that film confuses me, as do the books, in fact. There is, I can't deny it, there is something about them, and I don't know what it is, and I wish there wasn't, but there is.
Interesting.
Okay, well, I'll leave that there. How's that? Was
we're
that okay?
We're going to end up doing like a Twilight special or something.
I just think they're fascinating. I cannot for the life of me figure out what it is about them that works, because in a way nothing works and it's all terrible and it should be awful, but there's just something in there. Well, let's do that some other time.
So is that it for what we've been watching this week?
I think so.
What have we been watching this
week? Now you're just showing Well, that's the end of episode 21. I hope you guys enjoyed that.
Bumper.
Let us know what you thought of Phil's debut new feature. Did it, you know, ignite your interest factory? That's not a real thing, but yes.
I think you know the answer, bros and pixels and listeners. Get in touch.
If you'd like to see a return of that...
That might have come across really creepy.
It sounds a bit... You're not suggesting we do it every other week, are you?
I think potentially.
Oh, really? Okay.
What you've been watching this week has been great.
Listeners, let us know whether you'd like to hear our take on the hot stories of the week. What is it?
Fortnite.
Thank you, Phil. Okay. That's the voice I'll bring in next time.
Or if you don't like the voices, but you like the idea of the segment, maybe you could let us know.
Okay, well, guys, next week we're going to be doing our movie quote special. So thanks so much for everyone who's been sending those in. We're really looking forward to doing that. And it's not too late. Keep sending them in. I think probably the closing date will be next Monday, won't it, Phil? Because that's likely to be the last slot we'll have to record.
Yep, so that's the...
I believe that's the 25th, man, yeah.
You are correct, sir.
Thank you. So you've still got time to get in your random movie quotes. You send in the classic ones if you like, but we're particularly after the random ones that make sense to you and no one else.
The hidden gems at Super Bailey Bros or superbaileybros@gmail.com.
Thanks so much. We'll look forward to that, and we'll have a whole load of other things too. You've already seen The Jungle Book, haven't you?
I have already seen it.
I'm going to see this, and wow, my anticipation for it is all over the place. I can't.
I am looking forward to talking about it.
Are you really? Okay.
Hopefully lots of you will have already seen it, so you'll be eager to hear what somebody else
primed and
it.
Ready. Okay, well, yeah, we'll be doing that one and to cover other films as well. Anything more to add, or should we say goodbye?
Just say goodbye, man.
Cheers, everyone. We'll see you again soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Yeah, man, I had a lovely time in France, and it was warm over there.
Was it?
It was so cold while I was here. I was typing with my laptop earlier on today, and my hands are freezing. So much so that, have you ever done this? I went into Sainsbury's, and I wanted to buy some lunch. And I pretended to be really interested in the peppered steak slice in the hot food section. purely so that I could warm up.
I've never heard of that in my entire life. What, who does that?
I did it today.
You sucked the heat out of that.
I did, like, I walked it. But the embarrassing thing was, I didn't just stand there and literally warm my hands against the beautiful warm fire.
What, did you pick it up?
Yeah, I did.
Pretend like you're weighing it.
I pretended to peruse it. Like, I picked up a peppered steak slice and reviewed all the ingredients and things.
Well, your hand just warmed up. Yeah.
That's exactly right. Unfortunately for me, loads of them slid out of place. So then I had a reason to rearrange it. And man, I was toasty by the end of it.
That kind of disturbs me.
Why?
You've touched all those steak slices.
Come on, they're all wrapped. It's no problem.
Fine.